Peace and blessings. You are listening to Talib's Welcome Home Podcast, a space where we aim to provide content and connect our spiritual hearts with community, love, service, and prophetic wisdom.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. With you is your host, Ali Dia, and our co-host, Dr. Will Caldwell and Mike Swice. Assalamu alaikum, guys.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum assalam.
And we're here today discussing coffee shops and da'wah. We're seeing this amazing thing take place in the U.S. where these coffee shops are just coming up left and right in different locations right around Muslims. Usually they're Yemeni coffee spots, right? And we just want to take a jab at discussing how this is kind of interplaying between everything that we see around us, especially in Ramadan.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, here in Chicago, at least, it started with Kawa House coming to Lombard, what, like 2 years ago? No? Is that right?
Something like 2017. I think Kawa House started in Michigan, and then somewhere along the line, it came to Lombard.
Yeah.
I think Kawa House was at least the first that had like this like trendiness about it.
Yeah.
Everyone was so excited. It was like this new big hot thing coming.
You know, yeah.
I think
there were
Muslim coffee shops around that were smaller, but they didn't have like the notoriety.
Yeah. And they didn't have, they might've been like Muslim owned. It didn't like seem like a Muslim space, if that makes sense. Like it was definitely like, you know, you might know that the owners are Muslim. You might go there to support them, right? Like what one place I can think of is Chico Latte in Logan Square. It's like, and they even serve halal sandwiches. But like, it's not a Muslim space, right? This was a Muslim space, Kawa House. And it had a lot of hype leading up to the grand opening there. And then the same happened when there's another one that opened in Skokie.
Mm-hmm.
They opened on Eid of last year. And you just go there any time of day that they're open, which is like most hours that they're like open late. And there's always a ton of Muslims.
Yeah, their hours are ridiculously late though. Like outside of Ramadan, it's till 11 p.m. or 12 p.m. It's not like your traditional coffee spot where it's closing up shop at 3, maybe latest 7, yeah. Right? They stay up really, really late. And they saw that that's actually very profitable. And why is that? That's because
Muslims, it's having that social aspect.
Yeah, Muslims want somewhere to go to kind of make their own. And these coffee spots have become like this thing for us now as Muslims. You know, as Will kind of dubbed, he said coffee shops are becoming the or a new Muslim cultural institution in the U.S.
I think just kind of scaling back a little bit, when we were talking about the topic for today about coffee shops and the intersectionality of da'wah or calling to Islam, it reminds me of before we had the space here in Chicago, which we got in 2016. We were kind of, you know, like doing pop-ups everywhere, setting up at AIC for classes, but we were also doing a lot of workshops at local coffee shops around the American Islamic College. Senems comes to mind. And this funny story I'll share with you guys. I don't know if you were there that
What's
day.
What's Senems?
It's no longer there, but it was like a Muslim coffee shop.
Oh.
You know, it was a Turkish woman
like
who owned it.
In 2016?
2014.
Wow.
Is that the place on Sheffield?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then, no, that was Shift on Clark or something.
Shift on Sheffield.
That's the one with the yellow walls where we used to do the Convert Connection stuff mm-hmm. in that coffee shop. It was like a Turkish guy married to a European descent convert, and they had like a cafe and like a nature store, natural food store. Mm. And then also we would just like take over it at night and do talks like with Omar Muzaffar and different people. But there's another place called Senems. And one time we were doing our Introducing Islam workshop there. And at the end of it, we like kind of take it over, put a PowerPoint in there and just kind of go do our workshop, right? But now we have it here at the space, but we used to do it in random places where kind of were neutral meeting grounds. And I'll never forget, like right at the end, Senem was opening her coffee shop back up to the public because our private rental time was over. And three of the sisters who came to the workshop wanted to take their shahada. It was like the tail, you know, it's like that tail end when someone comes up to you and like, well, hey, I think I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, let's sit down. Let's talk. So when this one sister said I was ready, then two others were like, I want to take my Shahada too. One of them was Katie. Allah have mercy on her soul. Mm-hmm. Who was someone who's very dear to us. But we started doing the Shahada and customers started coming in. And this guy, he just looks at his wife. He's like, are they making Muslims up in here? He's like, what is going on? Because, you know, I'm like explaining, like, and this is our proclamation of faith. You know, I'm doing that whole thing and I repeat after me. And the guy was just like, are they making Muslims up in here? But I think that's kind of like, kind of what you're trying to hit on in some regards, right? Like this whole idea of where does intersectionality of faith as a lifestyle intersect with kind of just like the social aspect of being a human as well. And coffee shops are kind of emerging more and more to be that for us.
Yeah, it's really amazing. But you know, this is nothing new for Muslims, believe it or not. Like the coffee, if you really want to pull back even further, like you were saying, coffee's been around the Muslim cultural discussion since the beginning of coffee. You know what I'm saying? The history, I don't know if you know the history, Will or Mike, like, yeah, Ethiopia is known to be where it all originated, right? Legend has it that there's a man, a shepherd, who in Ethiopia, his goats started eating this fruit, because you know coffee is a fruit. Most people don't know that, but coffee is a fruit. And he had no idea why they were acting kind of hyper. And so he took a bite and he realized it gives him some energy. And so he started using it for late nights for prayer or whatnot. And then there's another legend from the Yemeni side where it's like a Sufi mystic comes in to Ethiopia. So it's all in Ethiopia in the beginning. And he sees the birds acting a little too energetic. And he sees them, they're eating from this fruit as well. And so he takes a few bites of it as well. And he realizes that it gives him energy and he starts using it. Right. Mm. But what really made coffee take off, which is crazy, and most people don't even see the connection, but what's really crazy about it is the Hajj. The Hajj made coffee take off throughout the world. So people would come all over, right? And as they're passing to get to Mecca, right, they encounter coffee and they would take it with them and they would do imports and they would do different trades. And then eventually what happened, it became really famous in the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
And so you see the first coffee house, if you will, open up in like 1475 in the Ottoman Empire, which then leads the opening of coffee to Italy and the rest of Europe. So it's a really Muslim drink. And in fact, if you look it up, they'll say it's the wine of the Muslims, right? Mm. Or the wine of the Arabs, which is really, really amazing. So you put it back to the time of the Ottoman Empire, and you'll see that the coffee houses at that time, predating all technology, they're like, it's the center of where the news is. It's the center of where the ideas are coming from. It's right. Where people who have time to get together, usually people that are relatively wealthy, and they're talking about ideas, mm-hmm. and they're talking about possibilities. And people that hung around the coffee shops got to experience that firsthand or got news from other places. So it was like those internet cafes of the past. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which you is know, really funny. I was reading that even like the Boston Tea Party was planned in a coffee house. That coffee houses, they also began to emerge in the Americas like in the 1700s. And the Boston Tea Party was actually, the plan was hatched in a coffee house. Because yeah. coffee houses preceded even like the concept of selling tea in the Americas.
Well, what's funny that you say that is that that's literally when coffee became popular in the US, is after the Boston Tea Party, because it became like you're not with the program, you're not with this rebellion if you're drinking tea, you're with us if you're drinking coffee, you know. So America, you know, as they say, what's the slogan, America runs on Dunkin', right? But that started in the Boston Tea Party.
That's right. That started with the Boston Tea Party.
That started with the Boston Tea Party. But really, it was America.
How much did Dunkin' Donuts pay you?
You know that? $0. But really, what happened is America runs on Arabic wine. That's the truth. That's what it is. Arabic wine, the halal wine. And so does everybody that goes to these, the Kahwa House, the Qamariya, the Haraz, right? The Muslims of the world. By the way, shout out to Muslims of the world. Thank you for letting us host.
And Complimentary Cafe.
Oh, and Complimentary Cafe. They were the original OGs that did it up north. So shout out to both of you guys, man. It was an honor to be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting sort of like historical recurrence, because coffee was so strongly like associated with Islam during like the very early years that it was spreading around the world. Like the Pope banned it.
That's right.
In Catholic lands. He called it the Mohammedan berry.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And then a later Pope allowed it, and he said, this is so good, we can't let the Muslims be the only ones who have it. But that connection with Islam was always there. And I forget the names of those popes. But, you know, as it comes into Europe, you know, like the European Enlightenment also is said to have like sprung from coffee shops.
Wow.
Right. And so, it's interesting to think about what coffee shops are as a cultural space, because it, you know, we talk about third spaces. It's definitely one of those. Right. But it's, I think what's interesting about it is that it's a place with a very low barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like we've done events at like Muslim restaurants, and it's a completely different vibe. You have to have like a very like strong intention to like go and do something, like have a gathering at a restaurant. Like you have to be willing to spend a good bit of money. You got to be really hungry. Like it has to be at a certain time of day. But the coffee shop, like you go, you spend a few bucks. It can be any time of day, right? You can say like, hey, you know, I've been in my office all day. I have a meeting. I'm just going to tell this person like, hey, come meet me at the coffee shop.
That's right.
You know, it's casual and it's easy enough to access for pretty much anyone, that it creates this sense of like just being able to gather spontaneously in the coffee shop, which if you think about it, I mean, it's interesting. Like, isn't that what we're trying to do here at Tatlif?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a low barrier of entry, right? Anyone can come. You know, we're trying to do a very similar thing. But these coffee shops are sort of like taking a lot of like the core principles that we have here as a community. And they're just turning it into like this alternative community space that is now, at least in Chicago, and I'm sure in other cities around America, it's sort of like emerging as like this Muslim third space.
Yeah, but it's a great way for also like Muslims to just be themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, and for
it's casual
others who are not of the faith to see them just be themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it filters out, you know, where are Muslims going? They're going to their profession, or they're going to their school, or they're going to their places of worship, or they're going back home, right? But this allows for another window into the Muslim world, for other people to engage, right, in a very natural, easy flowing setting. So like when we were at Muslims of the World, it's like they have a little prayer space, and it says this prayer space is basically for everyone.
You love
right?
that.
I love it, right? I mean, I do love it, but I think it's just the start of everything, right? Then you see all these folks coming in from all walks of life, and they're seeing quotes of the Quran up.
Mm-hmm.
on the wall. They're seeing people wearing different clothes than they're used to, like hijabs and whatnot, but they're all chilling in the same space organically, right? That is going to do a level of dawah, if you will, that we are not going to be able to, maybe, when I say we, I mean like institutions and organizations, right? Those people have to actually like willingly want to walk through your door,
mm-hmm.
right? This is something else. This is like a consumer saying like, man, this is a really good product. And then they're getting this passerby dawah, if you will.
Yeah. So Muslims of the World, for example, is one of the few cafes that I feel like has a dawah intentionality built into the actual business model itself.
Mm.
Right. Whereas like Kahwa House, it's more, you walk in there, it's like the history of coffee and it's like a gathering place. Muslims of the World, unless I'm mistaken, was actually built off of like an Instagram brand,
mm-hmm.
right? Where they were trying to actually introduce Muslim culture like around the world. They would have different series. And I think one of our friends was even involved with them for a long time. doing like humanitarian type of efforts and things like that. So it's really cool to see Muslims of the world, because like you said, they have the prayer area there and they have like that huge glass pane window. I was sitting in my car before the event we did and catching up on correspondence with people. And I was just looking at that window and you just see people come up and pray, you know, through that window and then just go back and do their thing. And it doesn't bother anyone. And honestly, like what almost 50% of the clientele there at least don't look like they're of like the Muslim tradition. Right. Like it's very diverse. Even my friends last night, funny enough, my childhood friends texted me and they're like, hey, have you heard of this cafe called Muslims of the World? My best friend, Joe, you know,
like going right into that, think about the space that you're allowed when you just enter Islam or thinking about Islam now. Wouldn't you have wanted that when you were first dabbling in Islam or entered like that?
Absolutely. I would have hung out there all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I even for over the years when people come to us and like, I'm trying to connect with the community, I'm trying to find a foot in. The mosque is obviously one place, but I tell them like, why don't you also go around and find local Muslim businesses? Get to know the owners there, right? Get to know like the restaurants and you'll actually build a sense of community even through just knowing local business owners and the communities that frequent those establishments. Mm. You know, it would have been huge, you know, to have something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, think about like if that moment where you at the first place that you mentioned, the guy comes in, he sees the Shahada taking place. And he's like, oh, are they making Muslims in here? Right. What if that happened at Muslims of the World? I bet you the dynamic would be different, right? Because that is such a self-consciously like Muslim space. And you walk in like, you know, the baristas are clearly Muslim. There's a masala in the corner. There's a lota in the bathroom if anyone.
Thank if God. Not, if not I mean, Muslim.
We need to have an instruction book in there though, how to use it.
We need to
not for me.
Give an instruction book to other Muslim institutions like restaurants, coffee shops, put a lota in your bathroom.
Oh man.
Public brother. Service announcement, guys. Come on. Like
well, thank you, Will, for taking that off your chest.
I've been waiting to say that actually for quite a long time.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if you guys heard or not, but like little John took a shahada like a day ago. You guys hear about that?
Yeah.
Was that your attempt?
That was my attempt.
That was your attempt?
Yeah, he set you up for that one.
We need a Danny.
Okay.
There it is.
I was cracking up because it was like, now you're going to say, from the window to the wallah. Anyway, so imagine the folks like.
I feel a lot better about all my stupid comments so far.
Yeah, you should, 100%. I mean, this is what this is all about, right? But like, imagine folks like Little John, and now we have Sean King as well, and his wife, and there are others, alhamdulillah, are entering to Islam, but now they can just like casually be like, yeah, let's just go to a coffee spot here and chill and have a conversation about learning their religion and deen and whatnot without all the multiple barriers that might come up, right? But I don't know, like we're talking about all the good that's coming out of these coffee shops, right? But in Ramadan, there's been a big question mark for people about what's happening in those spots during Ramadan, right? People are staying there very late till 2 something a.m. Fights are breaking out at times, I remember that. And at other times, you know, like the article that our brother Ahmed Ali Akbar, I believe his name is. Yeah, he wrote the article and he pretty much named it for what's really happening there, was people are trying to find spouses in the coffee spots now, right?
A lot of like covert flirting.
A lot of different flirting. Some people are, you know, are sending random Bluetooth or airdrops. They call them airdrops, right? They call the airdrops. Even us talking about it is kind of awkward, right? Imagine that that's actually really happening at coffee spots right now. And at the same time, it's happening really late at night and people are coming together, right? And they're trying to find a spouse or it's, you know, they're trying to, it's become this medium, right? For Muslim gathering, not just for hanging out or meetings for jobs, or maybe you want a coffee, but you want to pray at the same time, but it's also becoming this place where it's fulfilling a possible need where young Muslims come together to try to actually find a possible spouse.
Are we saying this is a bad thing? Like,
huh?
Are we saying this is a
bad thing? I'm saying some people are not happy with it because of the culture that's around it.
Some people don't want Muslims to get married.
Well, look, you'll obviously have the airdropper dudes that are like probably trying to hook up with people and stuff. A lot of people are just looking, they're just being them and they're in a place, right? Like we've gotten this criticism over the years as well, right? Like, yeah. Oh, Talif is a hookup spot. Da, 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 da. Talif is not a hookup spot.
Yeah.
Talif is a place of community. All we talk about is Allah and his messenger. We teach people Islam. We pray to God, but we welcome in people no matter where they are in their journey, mm. right? And I think you see the same thing in a coffee shop. Their customers coming to drink coffee, but they're preferring to go to a place where they believe that maybe the owners are a little more ethical and they're around people that they feel comfortable with. Like they see brown people in the space. They see other people that maybe have similar experiences to them. Like people should have this place where they can get to know people and mix, you know, in a way that is visible and transparent, right? It's not like some secret covert thing. How many people in our communities learn maladaptive relationship practices because they have like secret relationships? They don't tell their families. It's all done like behind the scenes or through text messaging and everything, rather than just being in a community with people.
That's going to attract people with great intentions. That's going to attract people with like okay intentions. It's going to attract some people with not so great intentions. But I think ultimately it's, kids are going to be kids.
Yeah,
at the end of the day.
Yeah, but like speaking about intentions, at one point in like 2014 or something like that, I remember Talif, we had an idea of having coffee spot intertwined with Talif, right? It never took off, right? But the idea is obviously still around. We even talked about having certain coffee being sold at Talif soon mm-hmm. and whatnot, especially after Jumu'ahs. I feel like it's a perfect plug and play. Right. But now more than ever, you have other masajid or institutions that actually have coffee spots in their mosque. So like Adam Center, I think MCC East Bay is doing something out there on the other side between the two coasts. Right. Per se. And I think Roots had one as well or has one. And that was something that we were talking about since 2014 and now seeing it happen throughout the Muslim world that way. I feel like the ones that are attached to institutions is still a little bit different than the ones that are freestanding. At least that's how it feels for me. The ones that are attached to institutions, there's, you know, it's usually like you're trying to go to that institution and then you happen to go to the coffee spot.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if we ever did anything at Teddy, if I would love for it to be just like a freestanding coffee shop. And then there's just like a kind of like a fluid opening between the two, where it's like, oh, if you want to pray, you just come into Talif, or if you want to talk to someone about Islam, fine, come into Talif. But it's like a freestanding coffee shop that's not associated, to allow for that ability, for that wide net to still come in, because it's a freestanding coffee shop that's just like in their local area, and then they just so happen to be like, you know, I'm interested in Islam. And it's like, oh, funny you say that. Talif is right here. Welcome in. Welcome home.
Yeah, I think it has to be. There might be a little bit more synergy there between a coffee shop and Talif, just because I feel like the motives behind the space, like the type of gatherings that happen in both of those spaces are similar. But, you know, you want people who are good at running a coffee shop to run a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have like a masjid board running a coffee shop, you're going to get a coffee shop that looks like it's being run by a masjid board.
Mm.
You know, you're going to have a coffee shop that feels like it's an extension of a masjid. And I think, you know, what is so valuable about the space is that it is casual, right? That like you can kind of drop your guard when you're there. You don't have this sense of like there being eyes on you. Honestly, and this is something that I think is true of Talif. Like people, you know, even though we are like a more casual religious space, right? We are still a religious space. I see people straighten up when they walk in here. And alhamdulillah, like that's a good thing, right? You know, we ought to have like a sense of honor and respect that we bring in to spaces where we worship. But we ought not to have that at a coffee shop. It needs to be casual. It needs to be sort of, you know, fun and like, you know, everyone having their guard down for it to work.
What I'm hearing is there's like these two aspects, right? Like coffee shops, these Muslim coffee shops are cultural phenomenon. They're not religious phenomenon, right? Religious people who share that culture go there. So do non-religious or people of other religious traditions. And I think you guys hit the nail on the head, just this whole concept that what is attractive about these spaces is that there's a low barrier for entry and people can come in and be who they are and do what they want. And through that, they get exposed to things, right? And some of these owners come and they set up the place to make it a place of dawah, like MOTW, Muslims of the World, MOTU.
Yeah, but would you call it dawah or not?
I would say MOTU, or I'm sorry,
Not specifically them, but I'm saying like what's happening right now, what we're naming right here, would we call this da'wah or would we call it something else?
I'll say this, but I'm sure Will has a lot to weigh in on it. I think what we're seeing is the culture, like the Muslim culture in America, taking on a new form, right? And coffee shops are a part of that, as is social media and arts and culture. How many of these coffee shops now, or even boba places, they're having like dhikr bead making groups and tatris, right? The Palestinian weaving, and they're doing pop-up painting stuff in these things. They're becoming cultivators or incubators for community, right? So I think you're seeing like the Muslim community in general is starting to really form an identifiable cultural identity. Right. Like it's starting to really come into formation. Right. And I think that's a part of it. Like having these places is a part of that.
Yeah, I think it is dawah. I don't want to say in a passive sense, but, you know, in the sense that like any robust group, whether you're talking about a religious group or whatever, any group that actually has a sense of vitality about it is going to have vibrant cultural institutions. And that will be dawah because people will see that and say, wow, hey, there's something going on here. This is really interesting. And it has to be like both like generally recognizable, but done in a special way that, you know, identifies it with that group. Like everyone drinks coffee, right? But there is a like identifiable trend of Muslim coffee shops that is popping up where you know you're walking into a Muslim space as soon as you enter the door. That's a real thing. When you have that, that allows people who would probably never walk into a masjid, right? Walk into Kawa House or walk into Muslims of the World because they like coffee. And they were in the neighborhood or they lived on the street, whatever the case may be. And they're able to go there and they have an introduction to Muslims. They have an introduction to Islam that they would get. I mean, where else? I mean, can we think of anywhere else that they would get an introduction to Islam and Muslims like you get in those spaces? I can't think of any place.
Fox News.
Uber drivers.
Uber drivers. the Muslim pop-up, the original one.
Those are the original dais.
Yeah.
Picking you up from the club at 3 a.m. in the morning.
It's true. I used to be a Uber driver. Before I worked at Tatlif, well, that was how I cut my teeth on dawah. But yeah, I mean, this is like a new thing in the landscape of Islam in America, right? And it is introducing people to our religion in a way that, you know, is probably reaching people that would otherwise not have been reached. And it's reaching them in a way that I think Americans appreciate.
Yeah.
Like most of the Americans that I know, and I've been all over this country. I think this is a generally true thing about Americans. They do not like in-your-face religion, right? No one likes to have a pamphlet stuck in their face, right? It turns people off. And, you know, like the divide between like, you know, religion and the public sphere is a real thing in America. People get uncomfortable. You start, like, if you come up to just a person on the sidewalk, even if you're able to strike up a conversation with them. If you start really prying into their religious beliefs, that will probably make most people uncomfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. But if you can just invite them in to a space, just because your Muslim coffee shop is there, they come in for a coffee, you know, they see Muslims sitting around. Maybe they've never seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've never been in an environment mm-hmm. like that. Oh, there's a masala in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've never seen Muslims pray. Like, they're getting introduced to all these like aspects of our religion in such a casual way, you know, that it is not going to set off those alarm bells that yeah, will I normally love it. Get set off.
Yeah, I love it. I actually think it's very much so da'wah, whether it's intentional by the folks that own the coffee spots or not. It's very much going to do da'wah 100%. Like, after a while, when whoever the lady is that's a barista is taking your like 17th order and she's wearing hijab, and you know that that girl or that lady now knows your drink and knows your first name, and she's like, hey Jim, same thing. He's like, same thing. And she gives him, it's like, now it's a very traditionally well-known interaction that happens in the American sphere that's happening between Muslims and non-Muslims, and it's over coffee, right? Mm-hmm. How about if somebody sees you with your child? Like, I was in one of the coffee spots and I was there with my newborn, and I'm holding her and she starts to cry and very loudly, and I can't do anything about it. And all of a sudden, like, four different women who are not in any way, shape or form Muslim, at least that I've seen, right? And they're just like, oh, how old is she? Oh, that's super cute. Oh, don't worry, darling. It's okay, she can cry, et cetera, et cetera. And then my wife comes in and she's visibly Muslim. She has a hijab on, right? And the conversation still continues in that tone, breaking through a certain barrier. And by the end of the convo, we all felt so close to each other. We laughed, we had fun and everything. And then we left, and me and my wife were thinking, well, I hope they have a really good opinion now of a hijabi woman with her newborn baby. You know what I'm saying? That yeah. I think that's the kind of da'wah that will allow in those spaces, you know?
Like, I tell people this all the time when people ask me about people becoming Muslim or leaving Islam. I always say this, like, almost 100% certainty that everyone who becomes Muslim, it's because they've had a positive experience with a Muslim, right? And somewhere in there. Like, maybe it was like the guy at the store who smiled at him, or, you know, last night we went to an Egyptian restaurant nearby here, and my kids were like getting a little wild, and Amu comes and like starts smiling, like the owner, like the uncle, the owner of the restaurant, and he like brings sweets to them and like, do you like your food? Do you want more meat? He goes and gets more meat from the background and brings it to them.
Hmm.
Right? Those kinds of things are what we're talking about on like macro scale now, like when you're talking about communities and coffee shops and all this kind of stuff, right? Like these little really beautiful aspects of hospitality that you find in the Muslim community, in the Arab cultures. Obviously, it's not exclusive to Muslims, but Islam uplifts that like sense of hospitality that for a lot of us, we're just like, I'm not, like, I went to this person's house, I feel like I'm a king. I just serve people tea when they come here to Ta'lif, put some sweets out. And people are like, oh, you treated us so well. You gave us all this stuff. I'm like, I just gave you some tea and some sweets. It's not, right? Yeah. And anyone who leaves Islam tends to do it also because of some trauma or bad experience they had, even if they start putting theological issues on top of it. But it stems to they had some really bad experience. And creating places like this, creating culture in a very strong way normalizes a people. It normalizes a practice, right? Like, you think about Islam in the 90s with the hip-hop era, how it was like, how many people became Muslim during that time? Like, their whole Rage Against the Machine, like loving like the anti-establishment vibes, right? Of hip-hop, right? How many people came to Islam through hip-hop, right? Because there was like this cultural strength about it. And then you have after September 11th, it wasn't cool to be Muslim anymore, right? 2001, it wasn't cool anymore. And I feel like we're getting back to an era where it's becoming cool to become Muslim again, like this populist like sense. People forgot, even though we're still in the era of crazy stuff being shown to people. I think like the rise of Muslim influencers and the growth of the Muslim community in America as well the growth of creatives, like you love to talk about as artists, and some of our friends who put on some really cool, like new TV series and are in movies now and things like that. So amazing, right? When you create these things, it's pushing that picture away, right? And it's allowing people to see, oh, I can be this too.
Yeah, I agree. It's really navigating and owning the narrative now, as opposed to the narrative always being owned by mainstream media. And speaking of that, by the way, you guys seen how TikTok, there's a pass for it to be banned recently? Mm-hmm. You guys saw that? That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild. I mean, like, you're talking about influencers and people that, like, that's one medium now that's probably taking away. What's crazy is, like, I'm seeing regular guys and women that are not Muslim, and they're going to halal food spots and reviewing them and making sure that their viewers know that this is halal and this is certified this way, and they're taking bites of the food and they're like, oh man, I gotta go there, right? I mean, that's a part of the culture as well. That's it. So it's like coffee shops, halal food, and hospitality. I think that's like the best Muslims can offer anyways. It's like the hospitality that we have, food.
Well, right? These spots are like a place, I think, you know, really for us to showcase our adab.
Mm.
And that's what really makes it dawah at the end of the day. I mean, that's how you get hearts, right? Is through the adab.
The character.
And I would say, like, you know, probably, it, like, if we were really try to put our finger on, well, what makes one of these coffee shops a Muslim coffee shop, rather than just a coffee shop that is owned by Muslims, right? There is some showcasing of our adab, like prophetic adab, that you see in these spaces. And that can come in many different forms. Like, I would say the way that I see it at Kawa House is very different from the way that I see it at Muslims of the World. But you do see it in some way or another. And I really think that's what makes these spaces, and that's what is going to, inshallah, draw people in and introduce them to Islam in a beautiful way.
It's really like the only thing that's made Talif, Talif. It's people, you come in, you have someone smiling at you, serving you tea, treating you like a queen or a king, no matter what your background is, no matter where you're coming from, no matter how you're dressed, right? And then individuals are shook by that to the point where they realize, man, like, what was I thinking? You know, this is really beautiful. I feel honored here. And we hope that you guys have, inshallah, benefited. Thank you all for listening. My name is Ali Dia. With us is Dr. Will Caldwell and Mike Swice. And I hope and pray to catch you on the next one. Coffee shops and da'wah. God bless you. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
You just listened to the Welcome Home podcast. Please consider becoming a monthly sustainer by joining 1,000 Hearts of Talif and commit to giving $3 a day. Sign up today at talifcollective.org/donate. Thank you and peace.